Hello and welcome to the CX App Live, an interview-style podcast addressing topics, trends, and tips for creating real-time digital experiences in a customer-first, customer-last world. This show for briefing and meeting professionals brings you authentic and unfiltered conversations with industry experts who know how to elevate customer experience across people, teams, and programs. Let's listen in.
Welcome, everyone, to our CX App Live podcast series dedicated to today's briefing professionals. I'm Darby Mason-Werner, Senior Director, Client and Partner Strategy with the CX App, an Inpixion company. I'm excited to be interviewing thought leaders across our industry who can share their experiences and ideas to help all of us improve our programs. Today, our discussion focus is on building powerful discussion leader bureaus. We as briefing program managers strive to build bridges with our discussion leaders who are often volunteering their knowledge and expertise to our briefing programs while continuing to do their day jobs. Building our bench of strong discussion leaders is an important priority, and it can be a daunting task as we don't want to burn out our top performers. How can we build an effective discussion leader bureau that empowers our DLs to be at their best, truly enjoying engaging with our customers, feeling confident and valued? Let's learn how programs are strategically tackling this challenge as we navigate virtual and move to hybrid engagements. Today, I am thrilled to be joined by Jill Swartz, Senior Program Manager, Strategic Programs at the Dell Technologies Executive Briefing Program. Jill is responsible for directing the strategy and vision behind the Dell Global Executive Briefing Program, the EVP's Discussion Leader Bureau, and other key initiatives. She manages a global volunteer community of 2,600 and a program that touches more than 20,000 customers and supports a sales team of 40,000. Prioritizing the customer experience, Jill also focuses her efforts on enhancing engagement and maximizing impact through world-class moderation and facilitation of executive briefings. During her five-year tenure in the role, Jill built the world's largest EVP discussion leader community. Additionally, she improved accessibility and process efficiencies by deploying workshops and trainings to the cloud, as well as spearheading the expansion of developmental offerings worldwide. As a leader, Jill is recognized for her unrelenting optimism and collaborative, high-energy coaching style that she brings to every project. Jill holds a Bachelor of Science in Business and Marketing from Arizona State University, along with a Digital Event Strategist certification earned from the Professional Convention Management Association. Jill has been involved with ABPM since 2013, sharing her expertise with the membership by leading sessions and hosting center tours. In fact, she'll be presenting a session focused on enabling discussion leaders in the new digital world at the 2021 Fall Workshop Series. And I've known Jill for a number of years through ABPM and also enjoyed the opportunity to partner with her to bring technology solutions to the VCE briefing program before her program merged with the Dell Technologies program. And I'm thrilled to see her sharing her amazing experiences with us. Hi, Jill. I'm so excited to get to connect with you today. Thanks so much for taking your time out to talk with me and share all your insights with our audience.
Yeah, thanks so much, Darby, for that nice introduction. And thanks so much for inviting me to your podcast. This is really a privilege. And truly, kudos to you. I was listening to some of the past podcasts that you've done, and it's such a fantastic series, and especially for the briefing professionals. I never had heard anything like this out there, so I think it's fantastic, and I'm really looking forward to sharing more about our Dell Technologies Discussion Leader Bureau.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm so thrilled to have you. And so then, you know, from listening to my previous podcast, I love to hear about everybody's unique journey to the briefing world. So can you share yours with us?
Sure. So I'm not sure that anyone really grew up thinking that I want to be a briefing professional when I grow up. So you probably get some really interesting answers to this question.
Right.
When I grew up, I was really aspiring to be in the marketing or sales realm. So it was just something I really gravitated to. And I did end up in sales management and marketing for nearly 20 years in both the retail, optical, and ophthalmology space. So 8 of those years, they also overlapped with being a co-owner of a really busy retail boutique and a floral business. So essentially, I had many years of managing people. I know they're like one and then the other. So many years of managing people, growing businesses, engaging with a variety of customers, and obviously some customers are easier than others, and coordinating events and responding, you know, quickly to so many unexpected situations that come up. So, you know, really, when I look back, aside from handling fire drills, the common theme with all of my roles was educating and guiding the customer and creating a flawless and impactful experience. So I've really always strived to create an extraordinary customer experience and make raving fans. And I'm sure, you know, we can all agree that this truly translates into building relationships and helping make sales, and it very much aligns to the role of a briefing professional, right?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, a briefing professional, you know, our ability to quickly build rapport with sales teams, customers, and other stakeholders, pay keen attention to detail and create that exceptional experience, which includes, you know, executing quickly and keeping calm in any storm. It's so transferable.
Yes.
So luckily in the end, you know, luckily when I was starting to explore other careers outside of the healthcare and retail fields about 8 years ago, I happened upon this opportunity managing BCE's Customer Technology Center. And when I interviewed with Bonnie Bryce, she could see, you know, although that I didn't really know the briefing realm, that I really had the planning, execution skills and acumen, and just really ramp and bring the personality and I guess perseverance needed to be a briefing professional and run the center in Research Triangle Park. So the rest is kind of history.
Yeah. You know what? First of all, I had no idea you had a boutique and you had that whole past.
A lot of late nights, because in addition to my regular job, it was always helping like buy for the boutique. It was really kind of fun and always had fresh flowers at home, which was really quite nice too. Well, but
that would be nice.
It's kind of nice having some free time these days at night.
But how great that Bonnie saw that in you. Like you said, all that past experience, and it perfectly aligns with everything that we do. You take the business aspects of what we do with our briefing programs. You take the scheduling piece, you take the hospitality piece, the relationship piece, you add all of that together, and how perfect that she brought you on board to manage the program there in RTP.
Yeah, I'm always so appreciative of that. And again, just opened so many doors.
Yeah, for sure. Wow. All right. Well, hey, I am so excited to jump into this topic today. You know, it's such a foundational piece. And as Karen Bintz will say, you know, the discussion leaders are really the heart of our briefings, right? This is where the rubber meets the road, and where you're giving that information to the customers and giving them what they need. But there's so much that goes into it. So, you know, I'm just
an incredible amount.
Oh my gosh, right? All of the different lanes that you're swimming in all the time to keep everything going. So with that, you know, I know that your Dell program has really grown and expanded since merging with, you know, EMC and VCE and Dell and all of these together. I kind of know what y'all went through. But can you give our audience an overview of what that Dell Technology Global Briefing Program and how it's evolved, you know, since that merger?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd like to start just as we stand today, as the Dell Technologies Briefing Program, we have 11 Executive Briefing Center locations globally. Our five largest by volume are the three in the U.S., which include Hopkinton, Massachusetts, Santa Clara, California, Round Rock, Texas, which is our headquarters, as well as Brentford, U.K. and Singapore. We do have other centers located in Greater China, as well as Bangalore and Tokyo. Roughly right now, we have about 70 team members supporting the global program. And in terms of volume, you know, pre-COVID, we were hosting just over 2,500 executive briefings yearly, and currently we're trending around the 55% range of that level. Definitely, I would love to take a step back, because it's really been quite a journey over the past 5 years since we merged all three briefing programs.
Yeah.
So for those listening that really aren't familiar with our epic merger of the briefing programs, a little bit of history, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So after the merger took place, we found ourselves with nearly 10,000 discussion leader records contained with three separate instances of Salesforce and over 400 topics. Kind of massive, right? So as part of the program structure.
But I didn't know it was that bad.
Oh, it was crazy. So as part of the program structure now, like, we have briefing center managers and consultants and coordinators that handle in-person and field or focus briefings. But at the time of the merger, we also created a global messaging and operations team and the team I'm on, which is strategic programs. Okay. So a large priority after the merger was to get all the databases under control, as you can imagine. So investing, first of all, in a briefing tool was a huge priority because we really needed that backbone, which a briefing tool provides, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of our plan of record. So that was a number one priority to get in place so we could manage things more efficiently.
Right. And you're using VisitOps, right?
We are. Yeah. We, there's so many. Yes. Yeah. They've been wonderful to work with. There's so many great briefing tools. I think that the different vendors are involved with ABPM. So definitely, you know, if a program listening to this doesn't currently have a briefing tool, definitely look at ABPM's resource list because, you know, we talked to quite a few and, you know, ultimately we landed on VisitOps, but there are so many other good ones out there too. So
yeah, but it is the foundation. I mean, you know, anytime
absolutely
anyone about starting a program or even if they've been going a while, that's where you have to start. That is the foundation. So
definitely. So that's what we call our backbone and could not do it without a good briefing tool. So for me, a big priority being responsible for the discussion leader bureau and as part of our strategic programs team initiatives was really to create that strategy to sanitize our discussion leader databases. Mm, 10,000, like I said, 10,000 is just insane. There's no way you can have 10,000 discussion leaders in the
event.
So, you know, really, it started with quick hits to start with. So looking at how many duplicates, when we took three systems together, we had definitely quite a few duplicate records. So those were like easy hits to take care of. And, you know, removing to the one hit wonders, we could look and see, you know, how many times had a discussion leader supported over the past like 2 years and someone that was just once, you know, easy elimination on that. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, for us, we really want our discussion leaders to be account agnostic, we would say. So we don't want them necessarily to carry a quota and have, you know, lanes that they swim in. We want them to be able to cover any account that we would call for. So we also like removed those that were directly responsible for sales. Then we reached out to everyone left. It was probably about 5,000 at that point confirm their commitment, and all the records that we had were relevant. And when all was said and done, we had reduced the number of our active discussion leaders to around 2,500 globally.
Wow. Oh my goodness. So you're down to 25% of what you had, but now a lot more manageable, which is
completely. Good. Yeah. I mean, still fairly large, but definitely much more manageable. And then, you know, another huge push for us in year one was with our messaging team. And for them, it was creating a content strategy. Again, that's a huge challenge. When we consolidated all three organizations, they needed to standardize and rationalize their offerings, and they wanted to really provide a more consultative approach to the account team. So ultimately, they identified situational outcomes and objectives to create this map of our topics for our new framework. And they shared that in a portal-based content catalog with gold standard decks for our account teams to reference, as well as our consultants and our discussion leaders. So I would say that is a brilliant piece of work, and it's definitely worthy of a separate podcast, Arby.
Yes, it is. And I have referenced that, and in fact, planning to reference that at the fall workshops and the course I'm going to teach with Dave Rogers too, because I remember you guys talking about this previously and just the effort, but the positive outcome that provides for the program. So yes, deal. We'll cover that in podcast.
I'll give you some names on that one for sure.
Okay, good.
But yeah, our content team and the discussion leader bureau, I mean, we work so hand in hand because obviously when you have a topic, you have to have discussion leaders to deliver it, and you have to make sure that they deliver it, not just deliver it, but they have to deliver it in a really consistent way.
Yes.
So, you know, our teams, the content team and the DLB strategic programs team, we're often referred to internally as our secret sauce of the program. And, you know, part of the secret sauce is really our ability to have two teams that are strategically focused on ensuring that, you know, not only do we have quality and relevant content and messaging, and we have the support from skilled discussion leaders globally, but we're always looking at what can we do to continually evolve and impact our business.
Right.
So, you know, quite a few of us, we do have the backgrounds as consultants or coordinators. So we've come from that realm, and we totally appreciate all the work that team does because really they're keeping the wheels on our bus while we're working to keep the motor humming.
Right.
So yeah. And as we've gone along this whole journey of the merger and building out the program, I will say that we have always continually referenced ABPM's world-class best practices. It's like been a Bible for us in some respects. And, you know, we continue to strive to hit all the marks in our program with that.
Yeah. And I think most programs do, which, you know, it's just another one of the benefits of having the ABPM community, that we can all strive for that. and continuing to raise the bar as well. And I think what you've done here with the program and how you had to tackle that, and you know, I remember with all the teams coming together at that time, and just the amount of effort and time that it took to work through all of this, but to see where you've come and now, you know, the secret sauce. I love that. I'm going to reference that too. You know, you are the secret sauce, because it is such a huge endeavor. And for folks to know, one, where to go for that content, but knowing that it's constantly being updated and it's accurate and it's aligned to the corporate initiatives, aligned to the corporate messages or products. And, you know, keeping everything up to date is one of the hardest pieces when it comes to content, but then making sure the discussion leaders are up to speed with that as well. And they know the changes and the nuances of what's happened. So, you know, and that kind of leads into, okay, how do you build this? How do you go and build this discussion leader bureau that you have? I mean, there's gotta be so many different elements of how you're going and recruiting them, and how do you get them trained, and how do you make them successful? So can you talk more about that? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Where do you go?
Yeah, so for us, we kind of call that the discussion leader life cycle.
Oh, very nice. Us.
So yeah, it's just, you know, it's really from the time you're recruiting them. There's mm-hmm. elements that go into that, as well as onboarding them. And as you're onboarding them, enabling them to deliver the message or be comfortable speaking to the customers. Mm-hmm. And then as well as, you know, supporting them on a routine basis. You know, once they're onboarded, what do you do to keep them engaged? Even if, you know, with 2,500 discussion leaders, some of them might be aligned to very granular topics that maybe they're not speaking as frequently as they'd like to in a briefing, but we still need their support. But how do we keep them engaged? They don't think we forgot about them, right?
Oh, yeah, right.
And then, you know, the time comes too where they are no longer part of the bureau, whether it be because maybe they got a new role or maybe they've moved on. So those are kind of the four elements I would say that are part of our foundations. Mm-hmm. And I will preface this for a plug for our upcoming ABPM session, because we're definitely going to go in a little bit deeper and into some of these foundations. Uh-huh. But you know, when we start and we look at recruiting, again, it might be that maybe there's a brand new topic coming out and we need to find folks that can support that specific topic. In which case, you know, we've got this huge repository of discussion leaders aligned to other topics, and we can, you know, target if this person speaks to, say, storage, then maybe they're a good target for this new message. And we can, you know, pull a list and send out emails to them, you know, asking them if they would like to be aligned to a new topic. So that would be kind of drawing from our internal resources. But then oftentimes, you know, we have maybe new people to the organization. They hear about the briefing program and they really want to be involved. So, you know, sometimes with recruiting, it might be just self-identification from people sending us emails. I think any program that you just kind of need to decide as a program, you know, if you don't have enough discussion leaders, where are you going to find them from? And what is your criteria? Like, do you mind if someone's quota carrying, or does it not really matter at all? Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, leads can come from recruiting different places, self-identification. For us, sometimes it's a manager that might come to us to say, hey, I've got this great team and I really want to get them exposure, because that's a great benefit for being a discussion leader, right? Being, you know, in front of customers, it's giving people exposure. They're building their brand. They'll have, you know, exposure to executives and a lot of opportunities.
Very visible.
So, yeah. So for us, you know, part of the recruiting is really playing up. Yeah. You're giving your time, you're volunteering, but what are the benefits? And we feel that there's a lot of benefits to being a discussion leader. So I think programs, again, need to, as they're building out the program, as they're getting the point of recruiting, you know, being really able to convey and articulate, why would I want to be a discussion leader?
Exactly.
And yeah, so that's part of, you know, the start of the foundation where we get started with the discussion leaders. Onboarding too. So, you know, once we have someone that says, yeah, I want to be a discussion leader, then we'll go ahead and at least set out some of the basic criteria. Like, these are the steps. So for us, we've built out some internal learning paths to kind of expose them to different new websites, our landing page for the Discussion Leader Bureau, the landing pages for the content and messaging, just so they have a better feel for all aspects of, you know, tools that they have available. Uh-huh. As well as, we've got a really robust training and development program that falls under the Discussion Leader Bureau, our strategic programs team. So again, sharing with them all the different developmental opportunities that are available. We can go into that a little bit more too here soon. Yeah. And again, enabling, I think I mentioned that as well. You know, all programs, I guess, had to decide, you know, how much work would a discussion leader need to go through to be considered, you know, ready to go. For us, we rely a lot on managers and discussion leaders, again, self-identifying, saying, yeah, I'm comfortable talking to a customer, but then there's certain topics
especially our big strategic topics that we know are on a lot of agendas, we might want to have some extra enablement in which the discussion leader not only would have to, you know, assure us that they've reviewed the gold standard deck and maybe listened to a webinar, but we might have a point person for them to also kind of give that whole, you know, message delivery back to and have them say, yep, they met, they like check the boxes, they're hitting the key points. And then we feel comfortable putting them in front of the customer knowing that they are going to be consistent in their message delivery. There's a whole program that we have that others on our team are responsible for. It's pretty in depth.
How long on average do you think, how long does that process take if you're onboarding someone new? I'm sure it's different if it's someone that's familiar with Dell and been an employee versus someone new, but.
Yeah, you're right. It can really vary. If someone's already, you know, been with a company, maybe they've spoken to customers before and they're pretty comfortable, you know, it could be pretty quick other than if they're speaking to one of our higher level messages that they need to, you know, again, ensure that they've done the look through the deck and are comfortable with it. So that's kind of self-paced. A lot of people might go ahead and be fine within weeks. Others could take months, just depending on how dedicated they are. Like if it's a new topic for them and they're, you know, want to take it on, but they need to kind of practice a little bit more. It could be a little longer. And, you know, some people too, we have quite a few, as I'm sure a lot of companies do, a lot of technical folks that, you know, maybe it's their managers went to get them involved and maybe they're just not quite as comfortable as they'd like to be in front of speaking to customers in a briefing environment. So we have, again, a lot of development programs that we'll offer them and shadowing programs too, that, you know, they have an opportunity to observe a briefing or maybe observe that specific topic that they're going to support. Again, just to kind of get a better feel for what is it like being in a briefing room if they haven't been exposed and then getting comfortable delivering the message. So we try to offer a lot of support that way. And other than that, you know, steady state, when we kind of move through the onboarding process, part of the steady state is, again, making sure we've got quality in our discussion leaders. So again, promoting our development workshops, we've got a lot of online resources, but also, you know, what we're trying to do moving forward too is, we want to do this in the past, and it is a heavy lift, is kind of staff audits or, you know, audits where we'd have folks within the executive briefing program kind of listen in to the different messages to say, you know, are the key points being conveyed? That's something still to come. I'm not sure how many other programs are able to do that, but something we aspire to.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about that. How are they measured? I know, you know, we'd have surveys and we'd ask for the discussion leaders to also be rated in that survey.
Yes,
their content and on their communication style, and you get it from the customer. So you have those ratings, you can aggregate that information and kind of, you know, we would give that feedback back to the discussion leaders, you know, privately in many cases. And, you know, when they got, you know, all fives or whatever and great comments, you know, we'd also share that with their manager and whatnot.
That's a great best practice.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're looking at doing this kind of auditing to kind of go and see about those kind of SAT scores or more about,
kind of more in addition. So like the feedback and surveys, so we do have feedback that we get, like surveys that we promote for the customer. And the customer is typically not rating the individual discussion leader, like on their skills, but what they are rating is how the content resonated for them. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Which gives us some really good feedback to always, you know, feedback to our business units too, to say, hey, you know, this is your deck and this is maybe not hitting the mark. So that's one piece of it. Now, in terms of the individual discussion leaders, we do ask our account teams, as well as if there's like a facilitator or moderator involved in the briefing program, we would ask our internal resources basically to rate the discussion leader.
Okay. Got it.
But in addition to that, this is where we're thinking. So, you know, we could rate someone, say I'm watching you do a presentation. I could say, oh, yeah, Darby's skills are great. And yeah, she talked all about, you know, her company, but do I really know, did you actually hit those key points that your company would want you to convey? So that's kind of the piece of the staff audit is, are we really hitting the critical pieces of that topic? And is it aligned what we expected?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because you want to make sure you can count on everyone, maybe in the bench, if you will, that everyone will touch on those key points and make sure to cover it, no matter who you have covering that topic. So,
yes. And then again, as part of our, you know, study state, we would talk a little bit more with our discussion leaders, not only about like the opportunities we have for development, but we want to recognize them. So like you mentioned, when, especially, I think it's a great point when you talked about the feedback and you see a great score, then you know, recognizing that discussion leader in email and copying in their manager means so much. So those little touch points that you can do, whether it be just a simple email out, or like we also try to formalize it in all our GOs and do a recognition yearly to our discussion leaders. Right. So we might have, you know, it's a little bit different in COVID times. Like we used to have maybe some appreciations over a lunch or take them to dinner or do something like a Top Golf or I'm trying to think of other events. We did a casino one time, which was a lot of fun that we would identify maybe the top, you know, 50 discussion leaders.
Nice.
For our area or whatever number would be appropriate, right? You know, we've resorted to during our all virtual time doing different online engagements. So there's a lot of fun things I know you can do nowadays online. So we did that kind of last year. So keeping them involved again in these different touch points. We also do things like all hands. So every quarter we do a discussion leader all hands just to kind of talk through highlights of the program. That's something new we started about 2 years ago, just based off of surveys. So I should also mention that yearly we developed an annual survey for our discussion leaders, which really helps guide us strategically in the program. So we look at their feedback and, you know, we question them. It's not terribly long, but we want to know, you know, are they finding that the customer profiles are impactful? Like how, just basic things.
They feel prepared and ready.
Their whole engagement. Yeah. Like, are we preparing them properly? Do they have the resources they need? But then as being part of the discussion leader bureau, are they finding that, you know, they are communicated with? Do they understand all the training opportunities? You know, different things that we think can really help us shape our future. So we do look at that, you know, yearly. And, you know, as a result of that, definitely different forms of communication. So instilling those all hands up quarterly. They wanted to hear from us more as a program. So we did that. We've always been doing quarterly newsletters with them, at least for quite a few years.
Wow.
Kind of quick hits too. So those were, two things that we kind of instilled. Also other things coming up like a mentor program. They wanted more opportunities to work with other discussion leaders. So all of that, I would just share with any program developing or even developing, what can I continue to do to improve? A survey is a great way to get some guidance.
Yeah, I
from
love
those that.
That
really
I have
are
not
invested.
Heard that. I have not heard that from many folks at all. It totally makes sense, right? I mean, here you are requesting their time over and over again, and to for them to know that they'll be able to give their feedback, you know, and they don't have to wait every year. I mean, I'm sure they can give the feedback
anytime. Yeah, we're welcome to give feedback anytime, fine, but we do try to formalize it.
But that you have these other activities that you do, these quarterly newsletters with the quick hits, and then you've got your all hands. You are really dedicated to this. And of course, with a group where you've got 2,500 discussion leaders, it's like its own business. It's over here.
It truly is.
Thing, right? It's like you've got your own business unit in a sense.
So. It is. It feels like that. And another thing too, Darby, that we realized, you know, really like a year or two into like the merger and once we created our teams, we realized as part of the discussion leader bureau, and there's about 3-4 of us on our team that truly dedicate a lot of their time to the discussion leader bureau. And we realized a year or two into it that we cannot do it alone. Like most of us, we're all based out of the Americas. So when it came to other GOs and sending communications to areas like our EMEA team and our APJ team in Greater China, and Greater China is quite difficult because, you know, they're not reading English quite as much. So we really recognized the need to be able to work closely with others. So we now work, you know, every month we typically have meetings with our designated executive briefing program GO leads and talk about like what's coming, what the needs are. Any communications we share with them that we're sending out on the global level, and we encourage them to also customize for their local levels too, to make it even more relevant to those local. And in case of Greater China, they have an opportunity to put it in local language.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's great. Wow. And, you know, with all of this support and everything you go through with that discussion leader life cycle and supporting them and all of this communication, I can only imagine that has shifted a lot, you know, in the past 18 months or so as we've gone into virtual. So are there different things that you found that you needed to provide to them, different skills or things that you really had to step up and jump in and provide to them, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think the funny part is when we went on shutdown, pretty much, I remember it was right around March 13th, maybe right around there, March 11th timeframe of 2020. You know, it was kind of sheer panic, right? Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? But then, you know, when you kind of rationalize things and sit back and look at it, there were a lot of things that really have stayed the same in terms of expectations of our discussion leaders, right? Because we, you know, we still expect that they're reviewing the customer profile and customizing their materials. You know, that has not changed going virtual. Right. Engaging with the audience, yeah, we still expect them to like have be in front of the customer. But the major thing that did shift was going virtual. So again, engaging with the customer, we needed to make sure early on, you know, we got them very comfortable quickly, you know, in front of Zoom and using their camera. And how do you look at the camera? And what does your background look like? Right. So that was definitely, you know, a shift. I'm sure all programs nowadays have gone through that.
Yep.
You know, and having now the Zoom backgrounds available and all of that. So that was one of the easy things I would say to kind of go through. But, you know, the other piece for us was, we used to always use facilitators in person for our highest level briefings. So we have a tiered program with platinum, gold, and silver, and facilitators were used on our platinum highest level engagements. So once we went to virtual, we decided we didn't want to confuse things. We always wanted to leave the facilitator role, so that a specialized role, as the in-person resource. So we created two new roles to support virtual engagements, that of the moderator and the co-moderator. So that required a whole lot of other recruiting as well once we went virtual. A lot of our facilitators became moderators, but we didn't quite expect the moderators to take on the customer insight piece, which for us, it's, you know, spending 15 to 30 minutes with the customer and kind of building out a framework to talk to them a little bit about their most strategic, you know, obstacles or opportunities at business technical. We can go into that another time too. But That was a shift. So really educating the discussion leaders of these new roles, moderator and co-moderator, and what to expect was another thing. You know, in terms of the time of the briefings, though, having them focus on keeping their tight timeline, because we know virtually people, we were not having like the full hour all the time. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was going to say, you're right. We had to chop down those briefings. You know, people aren't going to be visiting for a whole day. Everybody had to shift to, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 hours, maybe. You know, to cover.
Right.
You need to.
Yeah. And that's about what we're at, usually about 4 hours. I would think on average what we are, we could be 3, could be 5, but definitely not a full 8 hour day.
Yeah.
So really making sure that they, you know, focus on the presentation time and don't run over, because the time frame is so short. Well, not really so short. It could be still 45 minutes an hour, but the day in general, we don't have the time to continually running over and hitting the mark on our overall time with the customer. But other things too, in terms of engagement, they might've been whiteboarding in the room or writing on a board, but when it came to virtual, of course, they're not doing that as easily. So, you know, we've been focusing over time on their whiteboarding skills, being able to do it virtually, their questioning skills too, because so many times, you know, you're joining a briefing and maybe the customers aren't coming on camera, even though we encourage them to be on, can't enforce it. So, you know, when people are being quiet or maybe not asking questions, you need to make sure your discussion leaders are really familiar and comfortable with trying to engage with them and asking open-ended questions and things appropriate to kind of draw them out.
Yep, absolutely.
And I'd say probably, but the last thing with that too is just probably goes back to the rudimentary Zoom skills, but using the annotation tools and reactions, and again, things just to try to get engagement virtually.
Well, yeah, and you know, we've heard from a lot of programs too that, you know, they're trying to meet the customer in the middle with whatever tools they're comfortable with. So then the briefing program folks are having to learn all the tools.
Yes.
Know, Zoom and Microsoft Teams and WebEx and GoToMeeting and BlueJeans, you know, all of them, and they're all slightly different. So how you handle those annotations, reactions, even just sharing screens and, you know, things can be a little bit different there. So it's a for them to have to take on. So
I totally agree. Unfortunately, we really do try to promote using Zoom, but there are those cases, like you said, we can't force a customer to use something they don't want to use. It's all about what they want to. So having to adapt to some of the other platforms are really essential too.
Well, exactly. And I know that you've probably engaged with some of, you know, the consultant folks too to help your team. I don't know if you're using Mendel or maybe Ann's group, you know.
We are. Yeah. So in terms of things that we've done to make our discussion leaders feel more confident for virtual. So we have instilled a lot of training. I think last I looked, last half, we had almost 50 different workshops that we offered, whether it be internal or external, but a lot of them were external. So we do use Bennett Communications quite heavily, especially when it's come to training our moderators and around our customer insight session. Candy does an awesome job for us running a session to get, you know, those that we expect to help run the customer insight sessions comfortable and asking the right questions. Mandel as well. You know, we used to do a 2-day in-person discussion leader essentials. And then when we pivoted to all virtual, we had to quickly fix that. So you know, we've instilled some shorter workshops, like 1 to 1.5 hours. And that really, again, from feedback that we got from our discussion leaders in our annual survey, even before we went virtual, they said they would love some different options, not to take up 2 days. So cutting some of their workshops down to 6 to 8 hours for one of the discussion leader essentials workshops, but then quite a few others, again, around the questioning, storytelling, things that we found would be more relevant to the virtual environment. We got those stood up too pretty quickly. As well, too, with internal, that was another thing that came out of our discussion leader survey. So if I can't say that again, it's a great thing. Our discussion leaders, you know, said that they thought it would be valuable to have people internally that really understood our program also present to them or have sessions. So we created something called the Expert Speaker Series. And we hold it at least one quarterly. And it's really designed to engage our discussion leaders and showcase kind of our poster discussion leaders that really stand out in a particular area. So we've done things so far like around customizing, questioning, and whiteboarding. And I mentioned, I think before, like the mentor program, that was another request. So kind of a form of training, getting people, especially new to the program, more comfortable with it. So we pilot our first one this last half. So I think our first 16, and I'm sure Jocelyn during our ABPM session can go a little bit more into how that's gone and some details around that for folks that are interested. And it's really not a new strategy for us, but again, I mentioned the shadowing program. So that's another kind of way for us to help, you know, essentially train in a certain respect our discussion leaders to kind of listen to another one and learn.
That's, I love that you have all these different pieces you're doing and this expert speaker series. Just having those folks who have been doing this for a long time, who are comfortable, who, you know what they're doing and to present to the other discussion leaders.
Isn't that great? I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. So many great things here. And again, that you keep saying the discussion leader survey, you know,
have I planted that seed more than once? Yes.
Yes. No, they're telling you what you need, what they need. And you're providing that in different ways. And you're, you know, being agile with, you know, virtual and how do you bring in those additional skills and trainings and things for them, but do it in a shorter time frame because, you know, everybody's, I think, working twice as long now as we did before. Yeah. In virtual.
Right. They can't afford to have us like take up too much of their time, yet they still do.
Exactly.
And again, it's a great touch point where they know we still care about them.
Right.
We're still trying to engage with them.
Well, and as we've gone through this whole shift, you know, everyone in the industry, and I'm sure the workshops will all be talking about hybrid now. And so what is your plan for moving to hybrid and back into in-person? Are you keeping, you know, certain discussion leaders, you know, who will remain virtual because they're located offsite or what's that going to be? Do you know?
Yeah,
know.
Do we even know? When are we ever going to go back on site? But no, we definitely know. It is definitely
getting ready for a long time and it just keeps getting pushed out.
Yeah. And we try, what we've learned too, is not to be too focused just Americas because, you know, for us, we're still red. But when we look at other parts of the world, like APJ and EMEA, a lot of their countries are actually able to go back on site. Yeah. So they actually are already starting some of the hybrid briefings. So we feel like we're currently definitely in process on this, trying to get all of our collateral in place, all of our checklists for our facilitators and moderators and, you know, how will they interact with each other? Because we're going to, you know, going forward, we're going to go back to our in-person option for briefings, but we know, you know, people are still going to want to engage virtually. They may not have the budget. Yeah. They may not want to travel. So we'll still have 100% virtual, but we're going to meet in the middle too and have that hybrid briefing where we have some people on site and some people remote. And I think for every program, there'll probably be different definitions of what they define as hybrid.
Yes, there will be. Yeah.
So for us, yeah, we're just, again, working through work streams where we're talking a little bit more about how are we communicating this to the discussion leaders and how are we rolling this out with our internal teams. And also for our facilitators and moderators, again, making sure that they're fully comfortable and enabled to be as impactful in a hybrid environment as they've been 100% virtual and 100% in person. So we're definitely, you know, taking some first steps with our EMEA and APJ teams and learning a lot from some of their takeaways since they've already been doing some.
Right. And so it sounds like you're definitely going to keep the moderators when you've got a hybrid situation. So you'll have folks that'll be in person and attendees that'll be virtual. So the moderator will manage that engagement.
Yeah. Anytime, if it's for us, a platinum level briefing, we'll have, first of all, a facilitator engaged, because the platinum level for us is, mm-hmm. you know, probably account for, once we get back to onsite and hybrid, you probably 10-15% or so of briefings. If I'm kind of looking historically at what we've done with facilitated briefings. Uh-huh. So for them, we would have just them in person if it's 100% in person. And then we have all these models though. So, and then if it's hybrid, but it's platinum, we're going to have facilitators in the room. Plus we'll have the moderator, because we want to ensure anyone joining virtually has that same impactful experience. We don't exactly. want just, yeah, you know, like we don't want just that person that's hanging overhead on like the speaker that you never see
never and just hear from,
yeah. you forget they're there. Yeah, we yes. don't want that. So that's going to be a huge challenge for any program. I don't think any of us want us to go back to the point where he has just someone dialing in on WebEx or whatever and just kind of listening from the ceiling. You want to engage them just as much as they've been engaging now in 100% virtual. So definitely that's going to be a big focus of ours. And I know for so many programs, you know, it's just from all the physical aspects, right, of looking at our facilities and our cameras and our setup and being able to train our discussion leaders on all that. But in addition, you know, making sure everyone's really comfortable with the roles they're going to play.
Right. Yeah, lots of moving parts, again, getting ready for all this. But that's exciting that you guys are starting to do this in your APAC and your EMEA areas too. And then, you know, you'll have the learnings from that as you implement that in the US too.
Yeah, I think we can all agree a briefing program is really like a living, breathing entity, almost mm-hmm. always on it by itself, right? It's always changing, always evolving.
Absolutely. Well, Jill, thank you so much. There's so much in here that I think is just demonstrates the amount of attention, detail, strategic thinking that you guys have put into your whole discussion leader bureau, the program, the content, all of the ability to manage those 2,500 discussion leaders and recruit new ones and bring them in and train them and just this almost like business unit. Like I said, it's fantastic. And you know, I love to always wrap up with lessons learned. So I don't know if you have a few things that you'd like to share with our audience before we go.
I would be happy to do that before we go. So I think the biggest learning I've had over the years, just don't reinvent the wheel. There's just so many learnings from other programs, right? You can definitely draw on ABPM's world-class best practices as a great guide. And again, when you first asked me to do this podcast, I didn't realize how long you've been recording them. And I was completely in awe listening to some of the previous podcasts and realizing what great nuggets of information and guidance are available, especially for those building out a new program or even for our program. There were some things I heard. I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. So again, don't reinvent the wheel. Try to first rely on other resources.
Learn from others.
Other programs. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, our program, even we've engaged with some of the other larger programs. You mentioned Dave Rogers, Microsoft. We've talked to them. You know, and I think in a lot of programs have engaged with us. And I think, you know, as part of a briefing community, we're always, you know, really happy to share our processes and practices and, you know, speak to other programs and help each other. So, you know, we genuinely enjoy these interactions.
Right.
And then the other thing I would say is just reevaluating your strategy yearly. So, you know, considering not only what you think the goal should be, but, you know, you got to look at what is important to your company. So, like for us, this past year, Dell's been really focused on diversity and inclusion. So, another thing we're incorporating is measuring how many women are in the Discussion Leader Bureau and trying to make a focus of that. So, again, look at your strategy, not only from your standpoint, but your company's standpoint, and then also getting input from those that you work with closely, including like your sales teams, your discussion leaders, and always your message creators, too.
Yes.
And then I think the last thing I would suggest is just always be engaging with your DLs, or discussion leaders, I should say. Mm-hmm. I think I've mentioned that multiple times, but, you know, whether it be simple communications, offering their developmental opportunities, or giving feedback to them on their sessions. And again, providing those recognition events. You know, discussion leaders are so much of the lifeblood of our program. Mm-hmm. So really keeping them, their support and their enthusiasm is just so crucial. So those would be my last tidbits of advice.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And, you know, anytime, you know, we wouldn't be able to do these briefings without them, you know, and just relying on them, but supporting them in the way that you are. I love your tip about, you know, not reinventing the wheel. You know, there's so many resources, and it is one of the goals of the podcast is, you know, so folks can learn how not to hit our heads on the wall like many of us have over the years.
Yes.
Here's the straight path through, go this way, you know, that's really a key goal of this. So that's really helpful. And then I love what you're saying about reevaluating the strategy, but really making sure that you continue to be aligned with your company and initiatives and new programs. So I love that diversity piece that Dell is doing. That's near and dear to my heart. Love that.
Yeah, it's a great initiative.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. So, you know, I just really appreciate your time, Jill, and putting this together today and being able to talk about all of these great ideas. I know that folks are just going to learn a whole bunch about how they can, you know, if they're starting from scratch, especially like, okay, here's how the big boys do it. You know, this is how you can really put together so many different pieces of a program. And here's the things that you can do to start. You know, there's certain pieces in smaller programs. Maybe you start off with a smaller team. You know, you've obviously got a larger team because of your volume of the number of centers you have and the number of discussion leaders and the number of briefings. But all of those ideas and skills and building a program, that can be, you know, like I was, a team of one or two. You know, they still apply. They are still incredibly important. And it really is important to have that whole discussion leader life cycle that you were talking about. So
yes, thanks. Thank you. And I agree. I mean, smaller programs, it's definitely can be more challenging when you're just trying to get the day-to-day done in some respects. But you know, what a great opportunity with a smaller program. I mean, you're exposed to so many facets of the program. You're doing it all, right?
Yes.
So yeah, I feel blessed that we really do have a program that we can focus on this area. So thank you again so much for inviting me to discuss the Discussion Leader Bureau. And I really hope, you know, everyone listening, I should also say, I hope you all have the opportunity to catch our session during the fall ABPM conference to go just a little bit deeper journey with both me and you'll hear from my teammate, Jocelyn Domable. And we're going to cover not only the foundations of the Discussion Leader Bureau, but we're also going to have a pretty interactive session around the digital future. So we're really excited about it.
Love it. I'm so glad you guys are doing that. Can't wait for the conference too. So thank you again, Jill, so much.
And yeah, thank you, Darby.
And I'll say thank you to everyone listening today. And you can listen to this and our other episodes in our series by visiting www.thecxapp.com/podcast or through the My ABPM community app. Please subscribe to stay informed about future podcast episodes. And if you have any thoughts or questions about today's podcast or have ideas for future podcast briefing topics that you'd like to see us cover, the best way to reach me is by email, and that's darby@thecxapp.com. Thanks so much for listening.
This has been a production of the CX App Live, your partner in digital customer experience programs. For more insights, tips, and trends, visit us at thecxapp.com, where the experience is everything.